Welcome to the 39th edition of Make Pro Wrestling Majestic Again. I am Tiger Height.
And I am Peanut Gallery.
And we are covering, so before we get into it, we were going to be covering the third night of Wrestle Kingdom, but I have no idea what happened with this show. It was lit horribly.
It was.
The matches were super useless. Nobody seemed to like it. All of the music
was
had
copyright
issues, mm-hmm. So you couldn't hear anything. And it was just not a good experience. So
No. We
watched maybe 30 minutes of it and said, this is stupid.
Yeah, it was a waste of time.
It was an absolute waste of time. So we're only going to be covering Hard to Kill.
Yep.
We're going to do Heckling and Wrestling.
Yep.
Make that majestic again. Call it a show. So
pretty much.
Hard to Kill. Awesome show, by the way.
It was an awesome show. It's a couple weeks ago, so I'm trying to rattle
it
my
was,
mind.
It was last okay, it was last week. It was literally last Saturday.
That's a long time ago.
So, now let's kick off with the first ever Women's Ultimate X match.
Yes.
It was Chelsea Green, Tasha Steelz, Lady Frost, Jordan Grace, Alicia Edwards, who replaced Rachel Ellering for some reason,
mm-hmm.
and Rosemary. And the winner, I think, got a knockouts title match, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they get a knockouts title shot.
Yes. Here's the thing about this match. I had a very mixed reaction. I think it was cool. And the people who pushed it were Jordan Grace and Tasha Steelz.
Right.
But
They were out of their element during this match.
Yeah. It felt very contrived. And it was like, okay, we need to set up
these
spots.
There were a lot of controlled spots in this match and that sort of thing. You can tell that they did not have a lot of experience.
No. There was no organic fluidity to this match whatsoever.
Which I understand. I mean, it's the first time that women have ever participated in a match like this, but you know, it kind of killed a little bit of the magic of the match.
I think it did too. And I think that the Ultimate X stipulation should only be reserved for a rivalry-based thing, not making history. Now, if you developed these six women into a rivalry perspective and say...
But they did that.
No, they didn't. They just announced them in the match. They announced that there was going to be an Ultimate X match for women. And then a couple of weeks later, they announced the women.
And there were rivalries going into this that all six of these women were somehow involved in. You don't have to have a rivalry for this kind of match.
I think you do.
You don't have to. No.
No, you're wrong.
They did it to announce a contender for the women's title after Deonna Purrazzo, and this was the way that they decided to do it.
I guess.
It's kind of like Money in the Bank.
We can explain this more when we make Majestic. I think there is more fluidity with Money in the Bank, personally. But
No, there's not.
We'll roll with it. But Tasha Steelz surprisingly won. I was not expecting Tasha Steelz to win this.
You know, I guess I guess she's as good as any.
Mm. Yeah, I guess. But, you know, there was some stiltedness with the match that kind of took me out of there. But it was kind of neat seeing, and maybe if they do it one or two more times, there will be that fluidity that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But as a first, you don't know what to expect.
Right. And they didn't know what to expect. So there we go.
All right, our next match. Now, this was an excellent match on a lot of different levels. Steve Macklin and Trey Miguel for the X Division champion. This is how you do a rivalry match right here.
It was very hard-hitting.
It was
very brutal.
Steve Macklin is quickly becoming one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. He has a moveset that is very snap, very much akin to his body type and his personality, and it works for him. He's not trying to do flippy stuff. It looks impactful, but it's very brutal.
Yeah.
It's very easy. It's very simplistic, but it's very easy.
It was a very brutal match.
Steve Macklin's really coming to his own. I mean, Trey Miguel, bless his soul, he sold like a beast. He made Steve Macklin look like $1 million, but there has to be that duality with wrestling.
That's how wrestling works.
Right. I think these two, number one, they had a rivalry that was like 2 months in the making for this one-on-one.
Yeah.
And also they had the stipulation that if Trey Miguel won, Steve Macklin could not go for the title again as long as Steve Miguel was still champion.
Or Trey Miguel was champion. He said Steve Miguel.
They really say Steve Miguel?
Yeah, it was Trey Miguel. But.
So if Trey Macklin lost... I mean, I really like this, but Trey Miguel is still the champion with the Meteora. A great ending to it, too.
Yeah, great ending to that rivalry.
It was very good.
Yep.
And it was, I think this was Macklin's first one-on-one loss in Impact.
I don't know off the top of my head.
But great. It was a really fantastic
match. I think you're right, but I can't remember.
So for the Ring of Honor World Champion.
Again, just how can you have Jonathan Gresham in the match. The match is not going to be terrible. It's going to be the opposite of terrible. It is going to be fantastic.
You had Ian Riccaboni and I think his name is Timothy Cruz.
Yeah, something announcer. Like that. Yeah, the announcer.
The announcer. So basically, I made a joke on Twitter. By the way, you can follow me on Twitter. There was a link down below in the description with all the Linktree stuff. I called it Ring of Honor's Hard to Kill because it felt so Ring of Honor.
Right.
And I think this is a great way to keep the Ring of Honor thing alive because they are coming back some capacity.
Right.
And they are. But speaking of Jonathan Gresham, the Terminus show, because he's running that, they announced that the venue will not have concession staff due to work shortages.
Right.
So people can bring in their own food and beverages, but no alcohol.
Oh.
So I was looking at that. I'm like, huh, that's kind of interesting. I mean, there are some people that are upset about it.
And when is Terminus?
I think it's like in a couple of weeks. Okay. I could be wrong about that, but
I know it's something that we're going to be covering.
Yeah, we are going to be covering Terminus or Terminus, but. What an amazing back and forth match. I mean, this was fluid to fluid as fluid.
Right.
I mean, the pins, the counters, the transitions, the ring work. I mean, for Chris Sabin.
Oh, and this was also contested under pure rules.
It was a pure rules match.
Uh-huh.
And I hate saying this, but why aren't they. They have defended this Ring of Honor World Champion everywhere. And I think that's cool, but they do have other titles that they can defend.
Like, well, you know, I mean, you know, the Women's Champion was just defended this past week, so.
It was, and it was in a great match, yeah.
Yeah.
But what about the TV title? What about the tag titles? What about that? I mean, the Briscoes are the tag team champions, right? Yeah, they won. The Briscoes are obviously going to be doing something with FTR. Why haven't they sealed the deal on that?
Because they're waiting for them to sign with Impact. I mean, AEW. Yeah.
They're not going to do the match. They're really going to do this because the Briscoes have not yet signed an exclusive deal with AEW.
I don't know what's going on with
Briscoes. Anyway, it was a super awesome fluid roll-up for Jonathan Gresham to keep the championship.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. This was so awesome. And it was in a perfect position, too. We'll talk about that when we make Pro Wrestling Majestic again.
Yep.
Because I think match order makes Pro Wrestling Majestic again, too. All right. Big match.
This was the big match feel right here.
Jonah versus Josh Alexander. I was a little bit worried about how these two were going to clash based on their wrestling styles.
They did a pretty good job.
It was an excellent match.
Yeah, it was. Another excellent match.
Oh, yeah. Jonah, even though he lost, still looked like a total beast of a man.
Oh, yeah.
And Josh Alexander really rose up from the ashes to really make sure and secure his place as being in the main event scene with Impact.
Right.
And I was very happy about that because after you lose the championship as quickly as he did, it's going to be a hard thing to do because he has right now the shortest reign as the TNA, NWA World Heavyweight and Impact World Champion, that lineage, because it all shares. He has the shortest reign.
Well, yeah, and this is going to be his redemption arc because long-term storytelling, which I'll talk about more in my next
segment. I think Josh Alexander is still being in these big marquee matches, but not going for the championship is perfect because they're still doing something with Moose.
Yeah.
I like it, and this is just kind of that antithesis of this. Jonah was at the Impact Wrestling tapings, I believe, the rest of that time.
Yeah.
Is he still signed with the company, or was it a short-term deal?
He's still signed, I think, at least through April.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
So through Rebellion, the next pay-per-view.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure about that. All right, we got Hardcore War, the Good Brothers and Violent by Design taking on Eddie Edwards, Rich Swann, Willie Mack, Heath, and Rhino.
This, I think, was the weakest match.
This was one of the weakest matches
yep. of the night.
So, basically,
there was just too much going on for me to really follow, like, really
anything. I like hardcore war, but 10 people is a little much.
It is. That's why you kind of get lost in the shuffle.
I like the new style that they're doing hardcore war with, where it's you start off with two competitors and each person comes in with a weapon of choice.
Right.
I liked that perspective, but here's the other thing. The Good Brothers were dressed up in like jeans and like a t-shirt like you would be going into a hardcore match or right. a street fight, but nobody else really was.
Right.
We need to have everything is about that. And right. to be honest with you, it was a hardcore match.
Yeah.
I mean,
it just was what it was. Classic Tommy Dreamer hardcore match.
Right.
Sort of thing, you know.
Tommy Dreamer is backstage, people. I mean, obviously he is. And I can't remember who actually won. It was a fantastic hardcore match if you like that. But the babyface is what I think what was yes. the big news was after this match.
Yes, after the match, some people from Ring of Honor came up.
OGK, so yep. Matt Taven, Mike Bennett, Vincent, and PCO attack all the babyfaces.
Yep.
I like it, but at the same time, I'm so confused about the hodgepodge of people because if you know anything about these people, Matt Taven and Vincent had a huge blood rivalry
mm-hmm.
that spanned months and months and months. Why are they working together?
Because they're Team Ring of Honor.
It's an odd choice, let's put it that way.
Well, hey, you can't have everybody. I'm sure that if it was somebody else, it would have been other people, but it's just, you know, you just get what you get. And
I guess.
PCO has signed a contract with Impact
yes,
Wrestling.
Yes, he did.
He did sign
a contract with them. But I think he's the only one who signed a deal
yeah,
with them.
So far. Yeah,
right.
So far.
All right, so for the Impact World Championship, Moose defending against W. Morrissey and Matt Cardona, the rivalry was awesome.
It was.
The match was great. And I'm a little bit confused about the finish. Why was Cardona the one that ate the pin?
I don't know.
Because he was the main focus of the rivalry.
Right.
Even though I chose Morrissey, if Moose was going to win, I thought Morrissey was going to take the pin.
And see, I don't know. I don't know what the long-term strategy is for Morrissey and Moose.
I'm going to trust him more because obviously they followed up this show
right.
with a promo with W. Morrissey and Moose.
Right.
So obviously that's going to continue.
I think that's
going to
be the continuation of the rivalry right there.
Do you think it'll be going to Rebellion
yes,
then?
Yes, probably.
Okay. I mean, I guess that's fine, but then what's Cardona going to be doing? Didn't he sign a deal with Impact, or is he more on a contractual basis?
Like, he's full-time.
He is full-time with them.
Yes.
Huh. Interesting.
But
and then, you know, obviously Morrissey's not going anywhere anytime soon because he's still
right.
doing this.
Right. So I don't know, but I know that I know it seems like the Moose Morrissey feud is going to continue.
Yeah, a very interesting choice because both of them are heels. It's
yeah.
Just, you know.
Well, you know.
Really, really. I will say this one was probably one of the stranger booking decisions for me personally.
Yeah, but
it is what it is.
It was still a good match.
Moose is still champion. It was a good match. Great story going into it. I was overall happy. Just some holes, which we'll kind of poke into when we make this shit majestic again.
Right.
And finally, in a Texas death match, Mickey James versus Deonna Purrazzo. And if there is confusion about this, there is a specific thing about this match that makes it different, where you have to pin or make your opponent submit, and then they have to stay down for a count of 10.
Yes, that's what a Texas death match is.
I have never seen that stipulation associated with a Texas death match in my entire life.
Well,
I've been watching wrestling for pretty much a better part of my life.
Yeah, well, you know, they just make up the rules as they go. I understand the premise behind it. You kind of knew, okay, they're in Texas, blah, blah, blah. They really want to put this feud to rest, which they did. With this fantastic match,
it was a really good match, but there was something about it that was missing, and the problem was that right before this match happened, the Royal Rumble thing was announced, so they kept mentioning it, and
yeah.
I was actually starting to get kind of annoyed by it.
Why? It's historic.
her thing was supposed to be a surprise. I think it would have been a little bit more impactful.
No, that's not her fault. That's WWE's fault.
Well, yeah, that's WWE's fault. I'm not saying that's her fault. But this match, I felt like, was somewhat overshadowed by the announcement. Because
yes,
kept
it was.
Bringing it up,
it definitely.
That's why it was like there was something missing
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it definitely was overshadowed by the announcement of the Royal Rumble.
You know why? Because as soon as they announced that Mickie James was in this match, you knew that Impact wanted to keep this title on her.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I don't mind Mickie James still being the champion because clearly she's great, and with Tasha Steelz being the next number one contender
yep.
now.
Because didn't Mickie James also train Tasha, or was
yes.
it just Kiera that she trained? Okay, so
I think there was some Tasha Steelz influence there.
So I think that they're just gonna continue that arc where she goes and competes against the people that she's trained or has influenced over the years.
I guess because I'm to be honest with you, I don't know how long Mickie James really has as a full-time competitor. At this point, but she's definitely elevating this championship, and the announcement is big. Like,
yeah.
I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, no.
And watching the Royal Rumble, that's something I'm going to keep an eye on, because Mickie James is coming out to Hardcore Country.
From what I hear, she's coming out to Hardcore Country.
And she's going to have the belt.
Right. And that, she said that in an interview. I don't know the veracity of that statement, but that would be kind of cool if she came out to Hardcore Country.
Well, I'm going to assume, because WWE wanted her to be in this match.
Right.
And there are no ill wills about what happened with the trash bag. Because number one, that person was fired. And they personally called her and apologized because obviously they did not know. Mm-hmm. And we actually did talk about that when that news broke, when
yeah.
that story broke.
Right.
That in a way you have to blame WWE, but at the same time, how can you? Because there are so many working parts and pieces, things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily one person's fault. It's they're just the face of it.
Anyways,
before
we go off on a tangent, let's talk about the match at hand.
So, the match at hand. I thought it was structured really well.
Yeah.
There were parts where I thought was a little bit slow.
Yep.
Just a little bit slow where I felt like it was not necessary, but it felt like a blood feud.
It felt like this is kind of the end of their whole spiel here.
Yes, Perrazzo's obviously going on to now defend the Ring of Honor Women's World Champion
yep.
and the Triple A Rey de Reyes Championship.
Yep.
And I think she's going to be defending that at the next Triple A show. I could be wrong about
yeah,
that.
Against Taya.
Is it against Taya?
I believe it is against Taya.
Oh, that's right. I totally forgot about that match. Right over my head. Yeah, I totally fucking forgot because obviously, and then also Hennigan is facing Io Del Vikingo
right.
for the Triple A Mega Champion.
But anyways, that's another pay-per-view that we're not going to talk about tonight because that hasn't happened yet.
We're covering it later. So that is it for Hard to Kill and all of that and my weird rant at like partway in between there because I'm very passionate about this shit. So, Peanut Gallery, we're talking about heckling.
Yes, we're going back to booking styles. We're going to talk about Impact Wrestling.
I thought we did one for Impact Wrestling. No, we didn't. Never mind.
Yeah, we never have.
Okay, great. So, join us.
Don't scare me like that.
I swear to God, I thought you did.
No.
All right, that's fine. All right, so Peanut Gallery, this is heckling. Take it away.
All right, so Impact Wrestling, TNA, NWA, TNA, whatever you want to call it. GFW, for all I care, which
kinda,
I might,
it kind of was.
I kind of might do an episode on that too.
I think you should.
Anyways, let's talk about it because Impact Wrestling has always been known for its innovation. Whether it was the X Division or the six-sided ring, there's always been that sense that they've always tried to set themselves apart from the competition. And the way that they did it, and the way that they still continue to do it, is by incorporating different styles of professional wrestling within the industry, trying to set themselves apart, if you will. And I think it's worked in their favor for a long time. I think that there have been points in time when they tried to do things the exact same as other promotions have done, and they just fail. And I think it just goes to show how powerful having a good niche in the professional wrestling industry is. Obviously, right now we're at a point in time to where you know, certain niches are no longer being met because of the hiatus of Ring of Honor, and you know, just the general lack of travel that still exists within the professional wrestling industry.
Right.
But what I want to talk about is I want to talk about the modern era of Impact Wrestling, because Impact Wrestling has gone through many iterations with many different owners and many different head bookers. But I want to more specifically talk about the current one that was established in 2018, I believe, is when Scott D'Amore...
That was a transition Callis and Scott D'Amore was in 18.
Right.
Yes.
So I'm going to talk about that era because that's the era that obviously we're in, and I'm going to harken back to some of these earlier promotions. So going forward here, I think the biggest thing that we should talk about is the emphasis that they're placing on intergender wrestling.
I know. I'm sorry. I can't. For me personally, it's hard for me to really get into intergender wrestling.
Now, here's the thing about intergender wrestling. Intergender wrestling is very popular in Mexico, and the reason for that is, and we see that. And the reason for it is because that's their style, the Lucha Libre style, which we talked about previously. We talked about the Lucha Libre style of wrestling.
Right.
And Impact has always been really that sort of transition, because the six-sided ring is also common in Mexican wrestling.
Yes.
So I think that what Impact Wrestling strives to be is that sort of
alternative product.
It is an alternative product, but what they mean by alternative is they mean alternative American audience oriented product.
Yes.
That's always been their MO.
There's never been a large organization. WWE did a couple of intergender matches, but nobody's put enough emphasis on it here in America because...
I mean, like, AEW has every opportunity to do so, but they just don't.
I know why they don't, because it's stupid and it makes people uncomfortable. I don't like it. I've never liked it because there was a point in time when suspension of disbelief becomes too ridiculous. Unless it's like Awesome Kong, it's hard for me to believe that a Tessa Blanchard can defeat a Sami Callihan.
But it's very popular in Mexico. That's my point. My point is that they are that international bridge between different cultures of wrestling, different styles of wrestling. And they have been that way for a long time. And I think that was... and I think that a lot of that was, Jeff Jarrett's kind of vision was to bring all of these styles together, because obviously he comes off the heels of WCW, which did a lot of that before.
They didn't do the intergender weren't a bunch of idiots.
But
they were idiots for other reasons.
But I don't think intergender wrestling is all that bad, but... But my point is that they did a lot of international crossovers. They brought in people from other countries. They introduced different styles of wrestling, and TNA, Impact Wrestling, they just continued that legacy going forward and into the modern day. So let's talk a little bit about some of those barriers that they broke down. Obviously, they had the only woman who has won a major wrestling promotions world title the United States.
In Tessa Blanchard.
Yep. And then they have always...
That was number four. That was a weird one.
Yeah, and they have always kind of pushed the limit with some of the hardcore concepts, whether it is your Monsters Ball match, whether it is your, you know... exploding death match, six sides of steel, whatever the case may be, they've always found a way to kind of set themselves apart to become the product that was the alternative. And I believe that is what they still strive to be to this day.
Because clearly they're still around.
Right.
Something clearly there is working that brings people in enough
right.
to where they can survive. Where a company that you fought would die three or four
right.
times.
And I think that there have been a lot of points in time when people were like, oh, well, they're on the verge of death. But here's the thing about Impact Wrestling, and I think it speaks a lot to the creativity. And I think the reason that they're so creative with these concepts, with these matches, is because they had to do so out of necessity.
I can see that.
They were always playing second fiddle to the bigger promotions, whether that would be WWE at first.
Or at that time, Ring of Honor. But
Ring of Honor really came up in the mid-2010s. They kind of overtook that spot number two. So they've always kind of playing fiddle with the second or third slot. They were never number one.
Well, now they're still number three because of AEW.
Right.
But that's for another reason.
But I think Impact has found a way to thrive within that position,
oh,
despite
absolutely.
The fact that they know that they're not the most popular wrestling promotion in the world.
Right. Well, they're not trying to compete with it anymore. They know they're not. They have a carved their own niche out that people obviously still enjoy.
Yeah. Whether that is pushing the limits with people going for world titles, whether that is introducing intergender championships, quite literally with the digital media championship. And that's another thing, too, that I want to touch upon. But let's go back to that after we're done talking about the innovation part of it. And, you know, it is my belief that that spirit that Jeff Jarrett started and the innovation that they wanted to bring to the table was the reason that they continued to survive.
Right. And Scott D'Amore, you know, he's been with Impact, with TNA for years and years
yeah.
and years.
And let's talk a little bit about Scott D'Amore, because I don't think a lot of people know who Scott D'Amore really is.
Right.
And I think I mentioned this, but he's almost like the Vince McMahon of Canadian wrestling.
Yeah, he's been a booker since, like, I think, like what, the early 90s?
Yeah. And he really, he founded, like, two of the top schools, wrestling schools in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, he obviously didn't found the Dungeon, but he worked very extensively with the Dungeon.
Right. He debuted Frontier Pro Wrestling, I believe.
In Border City Wrestling.
In Border City Wrestling.
Yep.
That are farm systems for him, and those are still very reputable schools. Mm-hmm. They're almost like the Monster Factory and... What is that really big one out in New York?
That is a Monster Factory, isn't it?
No, I think the Monster Factory is in New Jersey.
Oh, okay. But anyways, my point is that really this man knows what he's doing. You know, he's not just some guy who just came in and like
he's
some
not, corporate he's not a, type. He's not a vanity project guy, and I hate saying this, but he's not Tony Khan.
Right.
Tony Khan is very smart because he surrounded himself with people who know what they're doing.
Right, who know the industry.
OVW was the other one that I was thinking about.
Yes.
Another very prominent wrestling school slash promotion that Al Snow now runs.
Right.
And actually now is the big feeder for...
Impact.
No, they're a big feeder for AEW
yeah.
right now.
And they're also a feeder for Impact Wrestling. But the point is that this man, he knows the business.
He's been in it, since the late 80s.
Yeah.
He's always worked in wrestling,
but,
always.
You know, I don't think he's as well known because he spent the majority of his career in an entirely different country.
Right, and also backstage. He
right.
was never really up front up until his TNA days in the... early 2000s with Team Canada.
Right.
And even then, people just thought that he was a little dweeb manager,
right.
not one of the main writers of the show.
Right, exactly.
That's
and
the difference,
yep.
because the internet is a powerful thing because we did not know about
right.
that back then, and D'Amore really came into his prominency around that transition time between
yep.
the two. Everybody knew about the McMahons because they were multi-generation. D'Amore was generation one for his family,
right.
I believe.
Right.
Don't quote me on that.
But he's like Paul Heyman was with ECW back in the day. I mean,
right.
that's kind of That's kind of how I see it. He's not the biggest or the best or the most, you know, he doesn't have the most resources in the world, but he can turn the resources he has into something.
Paul Heyman was very much more of that let's do everything sort of guy. I mean, if you're having...
Scott DeMore is like, how much...
He's being strategic
about it. What resources do we have? Because Impact Wrestling still deals with the same problems that most other wrestling promotions don't have to deal with, and that's the constant turnover of the roster.
Right. They actually really don't have that. You don't see a big turnover of the roster.
But over the course of many years, and this is why being number two and number three has always been such a problem, is because there has been a constant turnover of the roster with those smaller promotions.
Right, I can understand
because
that.
They feed into other promotions. They get sought after
because they're, you know, making waves because they're there.
Right.
And also the contracts aren't for as much money at the end of the day.
Right.
It's still money. It's still a very money-driven business. Welcome to Capitalism 101.
Right. And you know, again, you have had these large turnovers of people. I mean, and then you lose people that were important. It's like, well, your contract is up. Now you got to think strategically.
Like Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe's, and people like AJ Styles.
Right. And so some of the decisions that they make, they may not seem like the most popular decisions, but you also have to understand that maybe this person is on their way out.
Right. And that's the other thing, too. I mean, Impact Wrestling leaned on, like, your Kurt Angles for years.
Yep.
To the point where it didn't feel like a TNA show without Kurt Angle.
Right.
But now, luckily, Impact Wrestling and how DeMore has structured this is where there is a good amount of people who are either in that main event scene or that fucking close.
Right.
So if a Moose leaves for some reason, you have your W. Morrissey's, you have your Jake somethings, you have people who could legitimately fill that spot.
Right.
That vacuum.
And they're always, you know, and then there's always people coming in as well.
Right. TNA never really had that up until DeMore. Mm-hmm. Because they leveraged so much on those people because they were the marquees. It's like, yeah, they're marquees,
right?
But you need to build new people.
And I think way back in the earlier Anthem days, the Owl Anthem days, and I think about some of those people and some of those rosters, there was a lot more turnover back then with those rosters.
There was that big clean-out of a lot of big people, like Matt Bennett, both of the fucking Hardys. I think Samoa Joe left at that time. AJ Styles left at that time. Right. There were a lot of people, a lot of big stars that left
at
that
time. A lot of mainstays, right. So the Impact Wrestling that we see today, the only lineages that they share are titles and its history just as a company.
Right.
This company has gone through so many different iterations, but it always manages in some way to survive through whatever storm is being put out in front of them.
Right.
And I can credit the writing team for a lot of that because they have to find creative ways and innovative ways to maintain the continuity of titles despite rosters being turned around as much as they are.
And what I like about DeMore is that he understands that working partnerships and relationships is the key for that survival because they were so scared for the longest time of working with the other big name companies. Like they're trying to do business with you.
Right.
It's two wrestling companies doing business with each other, and that is it. They're not trying to sabotage you. They're trying to benefit themselves and say, hey, here's this, have that. Scott DeMore understands that.
Right.
That's why he's like, hey, Mickey James, if you and WWE want to have this exclusive thing with the Royal Rumble, go for it.
Right. And, you know, some other things, too, is that And let's talk a little bit about those international partnerships because that has always been a big part of their reputation is having partnerships with other promotions, whether it is domestic like it is here with Ring of Honor or international with the likes of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
They had Finn Juice
and Triple and Triple A.
Right.
Especially those two because those two have wrestling styles that are very different than what you might be used to seeing in America.
Exactly.
And Impact Wrestling is the perfect place for that because Impact Wrestling has always been known for being the alternative, having those different styles.
Right.
WWE and AEW, I can argue, can't even touch that outside of whatever watered-down shit they have.
I can understand that.
You, in Impact Wrestling, you have more of an opportunity to be more creative with, the resources that you are given.
Right.
And incorporating something like an ROH partnership in there helps to keep brands alive as well. And you see that...
Nobody wants Ring of Honor to go away.
And you see that they're willing to continue the styles. You had a pure wrestling match. Impact Wrestling is not known for pure wrestling, but they did it because it is the perfect breeding ground for that kind of stuff to take place.
Right, and then they have people like Minoru Suzuki coming in for a breath and a half, and your Laredo Kids, for instance, who is a mainstay in the X Division. Why? Because maybe he's not, even though he is a champion, they don't have anything for him right now. Hey, Impact Wrestling was calling for you. Maybe you can go and work over there. Still earn some money, and you're still under contract with us, but it's something different. And that's what I love about, and I think you, I don't think you said it before, but it was, it's akin to Japanese wrestlers going on excursion.
Yeah.
Because it really helps develop their own style.
Right.
You got them fundamentals. Go on excursion.
And learn new styles.
Right.
And I think Impact Wrestling is an excursion for fans.
Mm-hmm.
It exposes fans to different styles of wrestling.
It's a little more organized now than it was in the past.
It exposes fans to things like intergender wrestling. You may not be comfortable with it, but you have to give it a shot. To give it a try.
Right. I did. I just didn't particularly enjoy it.
And then people are like, I don't know about the cruiserweights. I want to see something
with the X Division.
And even then, the X Division isn't really a cruiserweight division. It's just a way for people to have something different.
Right.
Putting women into hardcore matches, into spots that might make other people feel uncomfortable, Impact Wrestling is willing to try it.
Here's the thing. I will even argue to your point that if it wasn't for TNA and the Knockouts division, we would not have the emphasis on women's professional wrestling that we do now.
Yeah, and people are like, oh, it started with NXT. No, it didn't.
It did not.
Knockouts division in TNA inspired these women to
now go and train. You can say Trish Stratus and Lita, but they only had it for like a cup of coffee because they were so popular.
But even then, it was still watered down. Right, I'm thinking like Awesome Kong and Gail Kim. They had a blood feud for a long ass time.
And they had awesome matches and they had a story. And honestly, I think we have to at least mention Dutch Mantel as it relates to that. That was his baby.
Right.
He was in control of the Knockouts.
Right.
And you have to give a lot of credence to his. Maybe instead of a booking style for a certain company, maybe you can go towards different bookers, like your Jim Cornette, your Dutch Mantel.
And then that's what I plan on doing, because there were so many iterations of Impact.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, talking about the current Impact Wrestling roster, Impact Wrestling position within the organization, I think it is a great breeding ground for different styles to be presented to wrestlers and to audiences alike.
Right.
They're not big budget shows, which is fine. They don't have to be big budget shows.
They have
the big budget feel though.
Right. Here's the thing with Impact, and I will even say this as a person who has gone to multiple Impact shows live. I have more fun at an Impact show than a WWE and AEW show any day of the week. Because not only are you that close and personal, it's inexpensive. You get to talk with some of the fans next to you. It's a different environment. It's like it's like going home to your family for Thanksgiving instead of going to a Halloween party.
Right.
That's literally the difference.
Right. And with AEW and WWE, you kind of know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
With Impact Wrestling, there's always going to be something a little bit different that maybe you were not expecting.
Right. And I do my weekly shows, and Impact Wrestling is one I cover. Sometimes they have a bad show. Sometimes they have a freaking awesome show.
Right.
And with AEW, you get, okay, it was a good show. Or WWE, oh, it was a bad show. But then you get, like, those one glimmers. With Impact, it's literally like this. Like, yeah. You never know what you're going to get.
And I think that's what makes it so fun, too, was that there is that emotion. There's those emotions. And it's never really dull. You know, it's never really dull when the interaction is just there.
Right. Dull and bad are different. Right. And that's the thing, because you can have a good wrestling promotion and good shows, and it still be dull because you know it's going to be good.
Right.
Instead of, you know, Impact Wrestling, where you get a variety of different things. Now, sometimes they might lean a little more heavily on backstage segments. Sometimes they might have one or two matches that make no sense as it relates to the show. Sometimes they don't. And it's that kind of variety that keeps, at least me personally, watching now.
Right. And, you know, again, yeah. And, you know, just to kind of conclude things, Impact Wrestling in its current iteration is still that, in my opinion, the center of that innovation style. And I'm going to call that an innovation style. Because they're a wrestling promotion that's not afraid to try new things. They're not afraid to try new styles.
They're not afraid to work with new people.
Right, they're not afraid to work with new people. They're very open and flexible with booking. You know, they're great with partnerships. And I think overall, whether you're a fan or a wrestler, there's always a treat when it comes to stopping by an Impact show, pay-per-view, excursion,
if they are ever in your town, I would actually personally recommend an Impact show over a WWE or an AEW show any day of the week.
Oh, yeah. And for the price, you're always going to get something a little bit different.
It's always worth the price, too. That's the other thing. It's always worth the price. Oh, always. Yeah. We have never gone to a show where, like, I'm really disappointed about this show. I don't think we've ever said that. We always say, oh, that was a lot of fun. There was a lot of great energy. Yeah. And we always sit at TGI Fridays and see the wrestlers and say, hey, that was a really good job. And you get to really connect with them. Right. There's a different connection with them. Is. And I think that's what I really like about Impact. They're keeping that personal connection with fans. They could probably expand. They probably could. I think it's a choice that they don't.
Right. I think it is as well. I don't want them to go to big arenas. I think they'll lose that feel.
Right. And they tried to do that, too. Yeah, they did. Keep that in mind. They tried to do that, but it just didn't work.
Right.
This is your alternative, ladies and gentlemen. Right here is Impact.
Right, and I even think more so than AEW is, you know. Yep. I think that Impact is still, and always has been, always will be, your true wrestling alternative.
And I think the one that you should cover next is GCW, because I think they are that alternative on the hardcore style.
Oh, yeah.
A lot more close and personal, and they're growing really fast.
Yeah, I think that within the next couple of years, there's going to be some serious competition with Impact Wrestling.
I would not be surprised if GCW, WOW, they get some big TV deals.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. Anyways, when we come back, wrestling lesson with Tiger Height.
And I'm going to be covering January pay-per-views for TNA Impact Wrestling.
We'll be right back.
so we're going to be doing some wrestling lesson. And my original one, because this was actually kind of out of the blue, was a brand versus a brand, because there was a lot of those. And there's more than I think a lot of people want to admit. But since we weren't going to be covering the Noah NJPW show, I nixed it and I decided to go with this.
Yeah, you want my opinion on brand supremacy shows? I have about the same opinion of those as he does with intergender wrestling. So.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad.
I hate them all with vitriol.
I think sometimes WWE does it well with some SmackDown versus Raw, or when they did SmackDown, Raw, and NXT, that was really good. I'm okay with that.
Still hate it. Anyways.
No, I think you're wrong. So, even though that it's somewhat brief, the January shows, as it relates to Impact, is the Royal Rumble season to Slammiversary. Because Slammiversary, they say Bound for Glory is, I think Slammiversary is their big reset. And I think it always has been.
Okay.
But I feel like their January show is the lead up to that show. It always has been. So, let's start off with their first show, Final Resolution 2005. This was their first January scheduled pay-per-view that was monthly, not weekly. Because they did the weekly pay-per-view shows.
Right.
It's hard to find information of the cards of those particular shows. But when I did, they weren't really interesting.
Oh, it's hard to find the tapes for a lot of those, too.
Yeah, exactly. It really is. But I feel like a good start is because they started the monthly pay-per-views 2 months into 2005. So this was their first one as it relates to the full schedule for monthly pay-per-views, and that was Final Resolution. There was a lot of very interesting stuff that happened at this show, actually. So this was the first world championship match of, I believe, the biggest wasted opportunity that TNA passed by, and that was the Alpha Male Monty Brown.
Oh, God, yes.
He faced Jeff Jarrett for the NWA World Heavyweight Champion at the show. Obviously, Jarrett won, but this was, I think, his only title opportunity.
Yep.
And he never rose to this level since.
Yeah.
And I think everybody has that consensus that Monty Brown, or Marcus Corvan, if you only watch WWE, was the biggest wasted opportunity.
Yeah, and if you're looking for a good one, I know that Marky D did a good deep dive into Monty Brown / Marcus Corvan. So I do recommend you. I think that was only like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was.
It was a great video. If you haven't watched it yet, I do highly recommend it.
Yeah, it was a really good show. But here's the thing. I believe he was correct. And I've agreed with that for the last 15 years or how long it's been.
Right.
I've always liked Monty Brown. And I remember when WWE announced on their website way back in the day that he signed with a company. I'm like, oh my God.
But anyways, we're going to move on.
No. I want to moan about Monty Brown.
I know,
so,
but
so actually,
just watch the video.
He not only did one match during the show, he did two matches. He won a three-way elimination match that featured Diamond Dallas Page and Kevin Nash to get this opportunity two matches before this match.
Hmm.
And there were 9 matches on this card. There was a X Division Championship match where Petey Williams defended the championship against AJ Styles and Chris Sabin. So some really big names there. We had, is that Team Canada? Yeah, it's Team Canada.
Hey, Scott D'Amore.
Yeah, it was. It was Scott D'Amore. He managed them. Team Canada, my thing, put Kananada.
Kananada.
They defended the NWA World Tag Team Champions against AMW, and Jeff Hardy defeated Scott Hall with Roddy Piper as special guest referee. And
cool.
Those were some other matches. So kind of an interesting show. Final Resolution 2007. Now, before we go into it, this particular pay-per-view has a special place in my heart because this was the first pay-per-view that I watched live of TNA.
Oh,
was
cool.
Final Resolution 2007. I remember it distinctively because way back in the day, this is kind of an innuendo, but he and I, because we're brothers, we shared a silver laptop that we would trade back and forth at a male parental unit's house. Do you remember that laptop? Yes. I remember taking it and watching that on the computer, and I think it was through a MediaFire live stream that I watched this pay-per-view.
Oof.
Yeah. So just a little thing about our lives. That's kind of what we did. We switched off, and I took the computer because nobody was using it, and I watched the show. But I watched TNA religiously, but never watched one of their pay-per-views up until this one. And I wanted to watch this one because I think this was the first one where TNA had – no, it was still NWA. So this was where Abyss lost his first and only NWA World Championship. He lost it to Christian Cage in a three-way elimination match for some reason. With Sting also as a participant because they leaned a lot on Sting at that time as well. So other matches featured on this were LAX defending the NWA World Tag Team Champions. This is Homicide and Hernandez, not Santana and Ortiz, by the way.
It's the original LAX.
This is the original LAX. They defended it against Team 3D. Rhino faced off against AJ Styles in a Last Man Standing match. And, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty decent show. About 8 matches, nothing too special. Those were the only 2 years that Final Resolution was at the January show.
Right, because then they switched with they switched a couple pay-per-views around. So then so Final Resolution became, I think, the last pay-per-view.
Yes.
And then
Genesis
became the first one.
Yes, Genesis became the first one for 5 or 6 years.
Right.
Up until actually they had to stop doing the shows because of the budget issues.
Right.
Because they had one in April, one in August, and then the last one in October.
Right.
At like the most. And I think at 1 year they only did 2 pay-per-views. That was Slammiversary and Bound for Glory.
Right.
Well, let's talk about 2009. This was the first time that Genesis was the pay-per-view for January up until the aforementioned budget issues.
Right. The hard times.
Yes. I actually called it the dark days of TNA.
Yeah. It pretty much was.
It basically was. So the event had 9 matches on the card, and it was main evented by a 6-man hardcore war. This is where 6-man hardcore wars make sense because there's not as much going on.
Right.
I don't like 10-man matches, period. So this was main evented by that. It was Mick Foley and the TNA front line represented by AJ Styles and Brother Devon for a reason taking on. It was Cute Kip and the main event Mafia represented by Booker T and Scott Steiner. That was the main event, by the way.
Jesus.
Yeah. Let's just say it wasn't a great show. I actually watched this and I thought the main event was really bad. But Kurt Angle faced Jeff Jarrett during their blood feud in a no disqualification match.
Mm-hmm.
How that wasn't the main event, I'll never know.
I don't know.
And also, I think Sting defended the TNA World Championship against Rhino.
Cool.
Also, there was a 3-way tag team match. By the way, the tag team division in TNA at this time was excellent. Where Beer Money won the TNA World Tag Team Champions against Lethal Consequences, which was Xavier Woods and Jay Lethal, and they were the champions going into this event, and then also they defended it against the team of Abyss and Matt Morgan. So a very interesting little collection of people. Other than the main event, I thought the whole show was okay. I watched it. Let's talk about there were a few years there where they didn't have one, or it was during the dark days of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back in 2019 with, like, semi-regular shows with Homecoming.
Yeah.
And we did a review with Homecoming when we were still the Pro Wrestling Zone. Do you remember that?
Like, sure. That was a long time ago.
It was a long-ass time ago. I think we were still in the I think we were still in Colorado when this happened.
I don't know.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, here's a throwback for me. So this one had 10 matches in 8 matches, excuse me. I was reading a little ahead of time. And it was main evented by Johnny Impact defending the Impact World Champion, right over my head, against Brian Cage, who cashed in his X Division Champion option C.
Yep.
at that event. The other matches featured a Fatal 4-Way match where Rich Swann won the X Division Championship. I think it had Jake Crisp, Petey Williams, and somebody else in it. I didn't actually write it down because nobody cared. And Tessa Blanchard defended the Knockouts champion against Taya Valkyrie. Yep. And this was the only homecoming event.
Yeah.
Because after that, it switched to our favorite event. Well, one of mine, at least, for January, and that was Hard to Kill.
Yeah.
And they had that since 2020. Now, this one was weird because this was before COVID.
Yes.
Despite it being 2020. So, packed house, whole nine yards.
Right.
Right.
This was the event, I think, where Tessa Blanchard won the Impact World Championship.
Yes, it was, actually. There were eight matches on this card, and it was main evented by Sami Callihan defending the Impact World Champion against Tessa Blanchard. It also, there was Brian Cage versus Rob Van Dam, Taya Valkyrie defending the Knockouts Championship against Jordan Grace and ODB, and the North defended the Impact World Tag Team Champions against Willie Mack, only because Rich Swann actually got hurt before the show, so yep. It was actually a 2-on-1 handicap
it
match.
It was.
Which we did cover that pay-per-view
yes,
event.
Yes, we did.
So, the whole in-depth thing about January and Impact Wrestling is a stop-and-start thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to really go into big depth about the history of it because some of it are lost.
Right.
There was a spell where they didn't have anything. But they really build, at least now, Hard to Kill as a big event.
Right.
Because I think the name of it really helps, and I think it really emphasizes how big TNA
right.
has come back
right.
from the ashes.
Right.
And Homecoming was the reformed thing of it, and then Hard to Kill harkens back to those dark days.
Right.
And I think it really speaks for it. I love Hard to Kill. It is one of my favorite events. I look forward to it every single year mm-hmm. since it came out.
Right.
And I hope that next year's event is just as good. I hope it's in Vegas because I think every TNA show should be in Vegas.
Well, that's not going to happen.
But anyway, so when we come back, we're not only going to make Hard to Kill and Impact Wrestling Majestic again, but we are going to make Pro Wrestling Majestic again. All right, Peanut Gallery, let's make this shit majestic again. So, with this match, I would have not done anything differently on a physical level.
Right.
But them mentioning the Royal Rumble as much as they did not have to mention the Royal Rumble in any capacity.
But that was just the big news.
It was the big news. If they mentioned it once, fine, but they mentioned it too many times, and it took me away from it. Also, the intensity in some parts of this match were not all the way there. If this is a blood feud, make it feel like that.
I don't know that it was a blood feud.
Well, now keep in mind, Mickie James beat Deonna Purrazzo
That's
for
true.
The championship in that historic reign. So in a way, it was a blood feud. We were there live when that happened.
Right.
Biggest pop of the night, I swear to God. But it was a blood feud because that's how Deonna Purrazzo viewed this
right.
championship.
But it's kind of over at this point. I think Deonna Purrazzo is moving on to different things. I think Mickie James moving on to different things. And
I'm happy this was the main event, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, I'm happy too.
I think even if they were not going to announce that Royal Rumble entry thing that WWE did, this was going to be the main event.
Oh, absolutely.
There was no point, and I hate saying this because this is mean, there was no point on Cardona being in this match.
No, there wasn't. It was really a Moose versus W. Morrissey thing.
If it was only going to be Moose versus W. Morrissey, they would have done a different rivalry. And I think Matt Cardona and W. Morrissey were taken out of a proper one-on-one match. Either or. If it was Moose versus Cardona, great. If it was Moose versus W. Morrissey, great.
Right.
A three-way match in this just felt a little off to me.
It did. There was always, it was kind of that third wheel situation.
Right. Also, Cardona was the main focus of this rivalry where
right.
people were really backing him, and they still were during the show.
Yeah.
But him eating the pin after everything that happened and how they built it was the wrong decision.
I don't know. I don't think they had a choice.
because they booked themselves into a corner by having this three-way. If they wanted to do W. Morrissey and Moose, that would have been whatever. And if they wanted to do that, okay, then you would have eaten the pin. But Moose emphasized that Cardona was a mid-carder at best. And for Cardona to be pinned clean, it emphasized that.
Well, that just makes Moose all the more powerful looking.
Right. No, it made him look right. Cardona did not feel like a main eventer in this.
Because it was a three-way.
Exactly. It shouldn't have been a three-way in the first place.
Yeah.
They booked themselves into a corner, and they made the wrong choice on how this match ended.
Yeah. But that's just what it is.
If they were going to do where Cardona ate the pin, I would have done, like, a chair shot or a bell shot. Or something like, oh, a cheat thing, you know? That would have been – that at least would have saved where Cardona could have theoretically have won that, or it was by fluke.
Right.
Too many people.
Yep, too many people
there
in this match.
There was no – if it was just Violent by Design taking on Heath, Rhino, and Eddie Edwards, that would have made this match infinitely better.
Yeah.
Just in general.
Oh, yeah.
The Good Brothers versus Rich Swann and Willie Mack should have been a totally separate match. They were shoehorned in there to get those guys on the card.
Right.
That was
stupid. That's pretty much it.
It was stupid.
Yeah.
And it, there was no reason for it, because guess what?
Again, there was just too many people.
The Heath Rhino Violent by Design thing was the hardcore match that this should have been.
Right.
And Eddie Edwards being put in there, if they want to do that just to have the balancing effect out, fine. Because Eddie Edwards is the hardcore guy.
Right.
But the other two teams, no reason for it. You had plenty of time to have a TNA or an Impact World Tag Team Championship match.
No, absolutely. It just didn't happen.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Just absolutely stupid. Yeah. This was awesome.
Yeah, I wouldn't have
seen I wouldn't have done anything different from the debut of Jonah to the match itself structurally and where everybody looked good after.
Right. And again, this is part of the redemption arc for Josh Alexander.
Right. And that is why Jonah was a big guy going in there.
Right. He was a formidable wall in the way of the redemption. And
right.
He had to overcome.
And now it's going to be the Charlie Haas arc, which is fine. So I wouldn't have really done anything different with this match. I thought it was structured really well. The rivalry was great. And, you know.
And I think Jonah has a few more months left, so we'll see who he faces at Rebellion.
Because
you
exactly.
know he's going to be in a match at Rebellion.
Exactly. So
I would not have changed a thing.
I wouldn't have changed a thing with it. I may have wanted to have Jonathan Gresham maybe do something with Impact a little bit more before the show itself, because it just felt like a cold title match to me.
It pretty much was, is what, yeah.
And it was good structurally. I wouldn't have done anything different inside of that, but I really wish they would have built a story around, hey, let's up the ante. Let's make it Pure Rules. We didn't know it was Pure Rules until the match started.
Right.
If it was Pure Rules, that's what makes it important.
Right.
It was just, there were just some story aspects with this that could have been done better.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit better, absolutely.
Right. So that was just kind of the only thing for me as it relates to that. I wouldn't have done anything different with this
no.
in every single way, shape, or form, including the winner.
Right. Because Steve Macklin is now even more pissed off than he was before.
Maybe we
so
can do,
what's
maybe,
his next move?
Maybe as soon as Charlie Haas's match is done, it's going to be Macklin versus Alexander.
Or maybe he goes after a different championship, takes advantage of that. He's pissed. He's a pissed off gentleman.
I think him going after Josh Alexander would actually be the next really good match for Rebellion, because obviously they're going to do Moose versus Morrissey. Let's do a number one contenders match between Macklin and Alexander.
Why?
Because both of them.
Why? Macklin lost. Macklin's just a pissed off redneck now.
Well, what other title can he go for? The digital media champion?
Yeah.
That's a step down. The only other
Why do you think that's a step down necessarily?
Because the only time that this title has actually been defended, it has not been defended on pay-per-view yet. It's been defended on pre-shows and stuff on social media.
So?
How can you sit there and say that it's not a step down? It's kind of a step down.
I'm just saying that's a perfect way for him to go about getting a title if he wants to, because he's a pissed off guy. He was going to take advantage of something, and he
maybe he wins the belt and puts it on the line every single week or something like that. That at least build the credibility of that belt, but also you know that there's going to be a development on a good match.
Right. But that's the point. The point is that now he's pissed off. He doesn't deserve number one contender. He deserves none of that. He lost. He lost the match fair and square, and now he's just pissed off, and he is going to look for a way to get gold around his waist. That's my point.
Okay.
He does not need to be a number one contender's match for the world title.
Okay. Here's the thing.
We need a few more of these types of matches for these women to be more comfortable. I think that starting with six people was the wrong decision.
Yep.
They should have started with like three or four.
Right, because we've seen that before.
Right.
That would have been fine. Like a six person thing to determine it, because now you're just adding people.
Well,
for
again,
reason.
They're not comfortable with the Ultimate X. You could tell. Why do you have the max number of people that can be in this match for the first one?
Right.
Have like three or four of them instead of six.
I think that would have actually put a benefit onto the match itself. Have like Jordynne Grace, Tasha Steelz, because they're the ones who brought it up, and maybe
Chelsea Green. Right.
Yeah, I mean, the other one's like, okay, Rosemary's been with the tag. Lady Frost just debuted, and Alicia Edwards has not been on TV. Why did they get that opportunity?
Right.
At least Jordynne Grace is a champion
right.
in some way, shape, or form. Tasha Steelz helped not only get the match off the ground, but she's been on TV constantly, and Chelsea Green has been wrestling constantly and winning matches.
Right.
That would have been fun, and I think that would have actually added to the match.
Right,
because
then
more.
The spots could have been a little higher quality.
Right.
But anyways, a couple of other things. The ROH invasion, what are your thoughts on that?
I believe. If they,
I don't know how much follow-up there's going to be on this. I mean, I understand why they're doing it, but I need some. They haven't done a lot of. Have they done a lot of follow-up with this?
Yes, they have.
Okay.
They have attacked. They attacked on last week's Impact. They attacked D'Lo.
Okay.
They had a couple of other involvements, including in the main event.
Right.
But my problem is that the people that they chose was a bit different. Because the people who watch Impact. There's the only assumption 75% of them watch Ring of Honor. It's almost the same fan base.
Okay.
And the fact that they had Taven and Vincent, who had that huge blood rivalry, now standing shoulder to shoulder like nothing fucking happened, is the
how long ago was that blood feud?
The number one contendership changed hands, I think, like 2 weeks before Final Battle. So it was
fresh. This was a recent. Okay.
It's still fairly fresh, but also they had a big blood feud.
Right.
This was not just a small blood feud. And also, they're keeping the same sort of gimmicks without any sort of synergy.
Right.
It kind of feels like, oh God, what was that team called? It was Bo Dallas, Adam Rose, Heath Slater, and Curtis Axel. What were they?
I don't remember that.
Social Outcasts.
Oh, there we go.
I feel like they're the social outcasts.
Right.
And that's how not what you should feel like as it relates
right.
to this.
Right.
Have them maybe wear like a T-shirt or some innuendo where they have like
something,
a color
something,
synergy.
Right, something that that brings them together. Other one, your thoughts on Tom Phillips,
whatever his name
and his
is,
no longer slave name being a part of the show. He replaced Matt Stryker.
Matt Stryker's firing. I don't understand. Because I thought he was doing fine.
Yeah.
Do you believe a three-person would have worked?
No. There can only be two in that. D'Lo Brown is just fine.
Yeah,
he's fine. He's fine doing the color commentary.
It's obviously a decision that they made, but I feel like they did that a little unceremoniously to Stryker.
I don't think it was either a good or a bad thing. Now I can see some positives. I can also see some negatives. I just don't know. I mean, I also
Stryker's tweet kind of gave me the impression that they just fired him, and my thing was, why?
Maybe it was an all-Impact decision-making, because they are still owned by Anthem.
That's true.
But anyways, That was another new development. I can't think of anything else that happened.
Not particularly off the top of my head, other than, you know, oh, I was going to want to talk about the orientation of the match, because I wouldn't have done anything differently with this.
Oh, yeah, no.
Because in the general overall thing of the show, this Hard to Kill was a perfect example on how to structure the orientation of matches, which is very important for people's interest to stay with the show. You don't want to burn them out too quickly, but you don't want technical wrestling to start off the show. Because they'll get them bored.
Right.
Therefore, every two matches, they had a slower paced match structurally. So they had first the Ring of Honor World Championship match. Or, yeah, the Ring of Honor World Championship match. They had a couple of matches. Then they had the Hardcore War.
Right.
Where basically there was a lot of technical wrestling. It was just hit somebody over the head or put them through a table.
Right.
There wasn't. It was a perfect melding of those two aspects.
It keeps your interest up.
Right. Okay.
So next week, I don't know when the when is the Terminus event.
I do not know. I can look it up really quick here if my shit wants to, because actually I had that pulled up a little bit before. I don't think it's actually anytime soon.
I thought it was like later this month.
I think I butchered the spelling on that, but we're just going to roll with it. Oh, Wikipedia, work with me today.
They're not going to. I don't think it exists.
You don't think the...
I don't think there's a page for it.
Okay. I will double check on that. I think it's next week. I think it's on the 16th. I could be wrong.
Anyways, we're going to cover that if that's being covered. If not, then...
Oh, today's the 16th. I think it's the 23rd.
Anyway, so if... So we'll cover that if that is indeed a part of next week. If not, we'll have a topic. It's TBD.
Right.
Because
exactly.
There's no other pay-per-view. So anyways, that's kind of all we got. Anything else we need to go over before we...
Other than follow us on all of our social medias, become a patron.
Yep.
Yes, we'll let you know ahead of time on what the next thing is. I think I know what we're going to do if we don't have a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But other than that, we're good. And as always, be...
Majestic.